Could you first explain to listeners what HB 312 will effectively do?
The bill that has been enacted is not as offensive as it was in its original form, but essentially what it will do now is permit the public to use a form, a standardized open records request form. Previously, the standards for making an open records request were minimal, meaning that it was a very user-friendly law, and it was designed to facilitate the public's ability to use that. Going forward, it will be a form that you are permitted to use that requires you to provide more information, chief feature of which will be residency. Now, they wanted to make that a mandatory form across the board. You'd have to use that form. And although some people may not appreciate the problem with that, the problem really is that it discourages some requesters. They had added in several layers of information that the law doesn't currently require. So the standardized form is now permissive. It still requires you to state how you qualify as a resident for purposes of using the law. And there is a definition of resident literally. Now on the form, they'll probably just give you a box to check off. Which one of these are you? You reside here, you work here, you own property here, your media organization, whatever, from anywhere in the country. That was that. So that's a big change. That notion that you have a very minimal requirement to make an open records request. The second impediment to access that the law contains is a requirement that you reside in Kentucky. That is enormous. And if you live near the border of any state that has a law that requires residency, you know what those challenges are. Again, they sort of retreated just a bit by expanding the definition of resident. There was a lot of pushback from national media. The Kentucky Open Government Coalition wrote a letter of opposition. Of course, we couldn't get it to the House because it was all dropped on us very secretly. But in the Senate, we tried to explain what these residency requirements have done, particularly in Tennessee. Currently, only about 7 states have them. So that was a big change. It's going to create problems. Inevitably, will create problems. Inevitably, will completely bar a non-resident citizen of another state who might have a very critical need for a Kentucky record. Media is going to be okay. And I think that was a big pushback on that issue. But as far as non-resident citizens, it's still going to be, and when I say citizens, a member of the public, will have a hard time getting records that they might have a very critical need for. The third major component is basically the legislature just doesn't want anybody is in their business. So they have basically insulated themselves. They are saying from the effective date of this bill going forward, we will decide what you get. It's a very narrow category of records that we will provide. If you don't like our denial, you can appeal to us, the LRC, but what we decide is final and unappealable. You can't take that issue to the courts. There's a case currently in the courts involving access to a sexual harassment investigative file of a legislator. So those kind of records presumably will be inaccessible for C. That is deeply troubling. They are extending the deadline for agency response from 3 days to 5 days. You know, we'll go from 3 business days to 5 business days. In all candor, I know that upsets a lot of people. It's less offensive to me as the fact that they, whatever the deadline, statutory or otherwise, they ignore it. So what we need to find is a way to enforce those deadlines. We're worrying about 3 days versus 5 days. 5 days is, relatively speaking, nationally accepted. You know, it's a fairly common deadline for agency response. So that's not huge. It's a huge change for Kentucky, and it's a 5-year-old law. But as being really egregious, I mean, a lot of states have deadlines that are commensurate with that. So the thing to be looking for right now is there are 3 more exceptions that may come up. One of them is from a guy from Salyersville. That's this very weird privacy kind of thing for judges, prosecutors, and police officers. The other is for a broader category of public officials relating to their home addresses, which have always been protected. And the third one, and the one that really disturbs me, that no one opposed except the coalition is one relating to what would essentially be bystander and surveillance videos, like the George Floyd bystander video or the surveillance video in the parking lot in Atlanta in the Wendy's parking lot where Rayshard Brooks was killed. The sponsors of those bills, it was so frustrating because they're saying this only applies to the courts. And I was saying, but the law doesn't apply to the courts. We've known that for many, many decades. The law does not apply to the courts. So if you're telling me this law only applies to the courts, that makes no sense because the courts will just ignore it. What it amounts to is they were trying to sneak it in as a law that only applies to courts when in fact it applies to every other public agency, a local law enforcement agency that obtains a copy of surveillance video. You know, it could be in a correctional facility. It could actually, you know, a guard could attack an inmate, you know, sexually assault an inmate. That would be protected under this exception. They don't think these things through. They just react. And it's really, really, really offensive because this is not how good law is made.
The Kentucky Open Government Coalition, which you co-founded in 2019, I believe, has been at the forefront of this fight. Isn't that a position that the Kentucky Press Association should be taking up?
So the Kentucky Press Association has traditionally served that role as sort of a watchdog. And we don't really know specifically what happened. We were completely blindsided because at that committee meeting, you know, I learned that their position was neutral, but they were waving the banner that the KPA helped us write this language. And, you know, they were very much involved in this process. And I think ultimately what we have since learned is that there was some horse trading, and what the KPA got in return for not opposing this bill was there were several exceptions, new exceptions that the sponsors wanted to introduce. Exceptions obviously are kind of like a permanent, you know, bar to access. And chiefly they were focusing on economic development, and the most serious one of all, the preliminary documents exception, which, as you know, is already, you know, vastly overused and abused. So they were going to expand the preliminary documents exception, as I understand it, and make it even more available to public agencies to deny access. So the truth is, that's my understanding, is that they felt like this was the best they could do to avoid getting those exceptions. The only problem for me is that there are about four other bills, one of them is going to be heard in committee today, that create new exceptions, and they didn't oppose those either. So my thing is that, okay, I get that when you're talking about 312, my other thing about 312 is what's to prevent the legislature from coming back next year with those same exceptions. You know, I don't know how you rest any kind of legally binding commitment from the General Assembly that they won't bring those new exceptions back next year. They tried it in 2019. The Press Association was opposed in 2019 and they were defeated. I just don't know what's going to stop them. You know, we got this deal this year. We do have one new exception. It's not a huge deal embedded in that law. Truly, it's not a bad exception. It should have been there probably, in all fairness, many years ago. But what we have is essentially that body of exceptions that just keeps growing. So that's the troubling thing to me, is I think you find in the law adequate exceptions to address virtually any of these situations. Economic development is well covered. There is an exception. It covers all the, you know, I think it covers all the possibilities, but they're very reactive in the legislature. They just kind of react and they go in and say, oh, well, Brady Industries, we got to know the names of investors because those were not protected. So let's go in and create an exception for investor identities where the state is also an investor to the tune of $25 million. Or, the failed Amazon bid in Louisville, you know, millions of dollars, you know, being offered, being on the table, but it didn't succeed. We didn't get that headquarters. So let's make all failed bids, let's make those protected. Let's give a specific exemption for that. That's the problem. They're being totally reactive. And instead of looking at the broad categories of exceptions that we've always had, that you basically have to prove that record falls under, you know, they're saying specifically this little record's going to be exempt. And, you know, the potential for abuse is much greater in that situation, in my view.
Do you know where Kentucky's open records laws fall in line with other states?
You know, that has been so fascinating for me to see, because especially since being out of the Attorney General's office, I've really kind of gauged where we stand. You know, I can look at other people's law, other states' laws, and I can say, you know, this is better in Kentucky, or, oh man, I wish we had this in Kentucky. They do, you know, with regularity, there are these rankings and these grades that are assigned. Well, most states fall into that, you know, that average C, C minus. I think we're about a C minus. We're usually, you know, mid, you know, like in the 30s. So somehow we don't have the worst law, but this perception that we have this nationally acclaimed law just really isn't accurate. It is a good, solid law. It has withstood the test of time, like I can't even believe, because the reality is it is drafted in such a way that that it's fluid. It's like the Constitution. It's, there's a fluidity to the language that enables, the law to evolve with the times. And I so, you know, I so respect the people who wrote the law. I don't know that we are nationally acclaimed, as some people would argue. I think it all depends on absolutely the willingness of people to defend the law, the Attorney General's understanding of his role, the court's understanding of their role, you know, as far as, you know, adjudicating disputes, because ultimately it comes down to interpretation. And you can exercise the bias favoring disclosure and recognizing that free and open examination of public records is in the public interest. You can exercise that bias, or you can ignore it and, it, you know, get to the opposite result. And if you don't have an Attorney General or a court, a particular court that understands that bias, and when I say bias, that's the word that the case law says. Our law exhibits a bias favoring disclosure. You know, we know that the statement of legislative intent, free and open examination is in the, of public records, is in the public interest. So yeah, I mean, it's a good law. It's a solid law. They're making it with every legislative session a weaker and weaker law.
Why should the average Kentuckian care about the passage of HB 312?
Well, I think that the mechanism by which this law was enacted, you know, that kind of furtive, secretive 2 years worth of dealings, discussions that nobody was privy to, demonstrates. And again, the legislative process is a unique process, and there is a need for a certain amount of give and take in that process that may not yield the best benefits if it's publicly scrutinized. But the reality is, you know, people were really blindsided by this because we really had no idea or no clear idea. You know, people like that are really monitoring this stuff know that this is not going away. Something's going on at all times. But the reality is we don't know what's going on. And and especially with COVID, we've come to realize how much we rely on public information to make decisions about, you know, our health and welfare. So the bottom line is that with each erosion of the law, you know, we as the public suffer. We have fewer and fewer rights. You know, we're not the media. You know, the media's voice is generally, until this session, well represented. Sometimes media gets a carve out. They'll get certain exceptions that exist in the law for the media. And in this case, we see, you know, non-resident media having an exception that non-residents generally don't have. That's good. We want people to come in here and be looking at what's going on in Kentucky, whether it's Purdue Pharma and the opioid crisis, whether it's the Breonna Taylor case. We want that national media oversight. But we also want citizens who have a critical need for records to be able to access those records, even though they reside outside the state. And, you know, I think that's what's kind of being lost in this discussion, on the pretext that we are unburdening public agencies from all these frivolous out-of-state requests. And honestly, nobody offered any kind of statistical, you know, analysis to suggest that agencies are, in fact, overburdened by out-of-state requests. Moreover, and this is what we have argued repeatedly, the 45-year-old law contains its own answer to that problem. There are unreasonably burdensome intent to disrupt essential function provisions in the law. So we already have answers embedded in the law. This is simply a pretext, you know, this idea that out-of-state requesters are overburdening our state agencies, our local agencies, and not contributing to the tax base. That is a pretext. This is simply a way of diminishing the public's right of access to records and not appreciating that the value of our information extends beyond the state line. You know, our records have value beyond our borders.
Do you think Governor Beshear will veto, and will that matter?
I don't think it'll ultimately matter. And the question is he going to waste a veto on this? Knowing, I mean, he's going to, I suspect there are going to be things that are, I don't know. I saw when the Associated Press first wrote about this, they said that his office did not respond to their request for comment. Later, they updated that article and said that their spokesperson said that Governor Beshear wants greater transparency, not less transparency. I feel like he's inclined to do it. And I know that it's more of a gesture than with any likelihood of success or making a difference. I can tell you that in my lifetime, in my professional lifetime, I saw governors, at least one, perhaps two. I know Paul Patton vetoed an open records bill back in the 90s, successfully vetoed it. It was basically to create a, what would have been in Kentucky, its own privacy act. I better not say that too loud or they'll get some idea. But the reality is that was vetoed successfully back in the 90s, but the balance of power was different in the legislature. The Democrats still held sway. So I think he might. I hope he will. I think we've made convincing arguments. But again, it's more or less a gesture, a symbolic gesture, because I don't think he can, they have no problem overriding his vetoes.